there's some discussion coming up soon. This is the mid-fiscal year budget review or something.
Yes.
And that there's a move to, again, take away the funding from the Citizens Police Review Board, which, of course, is minimal enough, which is part of the problem. It's part of what you've called it ineffective before, and you're right. And one of the reasons it's ineffective is that it simply does not have the operating funds, and it doesn't have staff that believes in the mission and the support of the city government. And we have been wanting to bring Sherry Connable's resolution to the city council, the resolution that that reinforces Santa Cruz's commitment to non-discrimination and non-tolerance with selective enforcement of the law. And there's this, it seems like an all-American apple pie type, you know, resolution. It sounds
is that going to get on a council agenda, Mark?
Well, I looked at the agenda yesterday. I looked online and I breezed through it real quick and I didn't see it there. Now, maybe I missed it and I did it. You know, I worked 12 hours yesterday and I looked at it yesterday at about 11:30 p.m. So maybe it was there and I didn't see it, but it was supposed to be there. And if it's not there, I think we're going to have to bring it there soon, because, like, if it's not on this agenda, which is the 14th, and they have a meeting, I understand, on the 21st, where they're going to discuss whether or not they're going to keep funding the CPRB, whether or not I'm going to be reappointed to the CPRB, and there's several things that leads me to believe that there may be a push right now to get rid of the CPRB. There was a story in the Sentinel yesterday about racial profiling.
Right.
And
right.
I talked to the reporter myself for quite a while and gave her a lot of information about racial profiling in Santa Cruz and its existence and the evidence we have of it and the anecdotal evidence. And I referred her also to the vice chair, Brent Faust, who's been working specifically on that issue. And he also was supposed to be on the chief's task force with this new data collection thing, and he got no information whatsoever. It's like there's no cooperation.
Right.
And my theory that this board was founded to not be effective, you know, it seems to be true.
Well-evolved theory there, Mark.
Well, you know, I was away from town when it was formed, and I just took it on face value that its purpose was to be fulfilled.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Mark. I'm going to hand you back over to Robert. I do actually have to leave. that's real. I'm 10 minutes late. But thanks for calling. I appreciate it. And do what you can there. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Mark, stay with us because you do have a meeting tomorrow, and it sounds like you're on the chopping block on the 21st or maybe.
Or sometime soon. It feels that way. I mean, there's no direct information. Yeah. All right, Bob, take it easy.
Well, I think... you know, there are a number of things I wanted to suggest. You've heard my suggestions before, of course, repeatedly. But you know, it might be good for the public to hear it and also to be able to comment if they choose to, and also to have you comment publicly. And I want to tell you that I regard it as an act of courage, both for you and for Bob, to come on my show. You're welcome, Bob. Thank you for coming. Because I'm not the most popular person in most city council members' date books. In fact, I'm probably top on their arrest list, perhaps below Chris Brozda and John Gilder, but, you know, those are names probably most people don't know, but they've been arrested. But, you know, I'm glad you're calling in, and I want to kind of get to this...
Are you saying people don't like you, Robert?
Well, I'm saying some politicians find me, as the word goes, anathema. They don't like me a bit.
I'm not sure if I do.
Well, you're one of those politicians I've aimed my barbs at.
I'm not a politician. Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
But, you know, I know that, I mean, you are a person in a political role in the sense that you are a commissioner. You've been on the CPRB, what, for about a year now?
Yeah.
And there's some, you're a man of African-American descent.
That's correct.
And you think they're going to fire your ass off the board and risk being accused of being prejudiced?
Well, see, like, number one, I don't know if that would be the reason. The reason that I would feel that if it were true that I was removed or didn't get reappointed, I would feel that it didn't have so much to do with me being African-American as being an African-American who is interested in seeing that justice be done, not just for African Americans, because I have an issue, I have an interest in the racial profiling thing, because I talk to a lot of teens and young people who feel that they are victims of this, but also in general, I like to see justice done, and I'd like to, and there's a city commission that's in place, and I was put on it, and I'd like to fulfill that mission, and I keep meeting roadblocks.
Give us a If you can, give us a summary of you think what your major accomplishments are of the last year, and also where you were blocked. What are the main areas in which the CPRB and maybe the initiatives you're specifically trying to forward are being blocked?
Well, mostly what I want to talk about is the accountable resolution.
That's a resolution against selective enforcement.
Yeah, it's actually, it starts off with how we would like to, that we'd like to believe. Anyway, that we're a community that does not tolerate discrimination in any form and against any class or race or economic people of any economic level. And
you know, it might be useful, Mark, for people to understand where this resolution came from.
Okay.
Sherry Connable has been an activist on the streets frequently. I've seen her out there. I've been out there and sometimes with her, sometimes not so much with her. But she has observed, as of many of us, a poor person or a raggedy person being given a ticket or being harassed for, let's say, sitting on the lip of a planter or sitting near a building or playing an instrument near a building or riding a bicycle the wrong way on Pacific Avenue or riding a bicycle on the sidewalk or sitting at a table.
And I've observed people getting tickets who don't look like they're dressed to...
Right. Where,
yeah.
While others doing exactly the same thing are
correct.
Ignored by the police.
And I've witnessed that myself.
And that's selective enforcement.
That's
for those of you who aren't aware of that.
Which we recognize as a form of discrimination, which is what the resolution is about, non-discrimination.
Right. Now, what Scott Kennedy would tell you and has told us on Monday night at the stakeholders meeting of the street performers is selective enforcement really is a good thing. And it's the kind of thing that, you know, police do on the highways with speeders, because you can't catch every speeder, but if you catch one or two, it deters the rest of them. And also it provides an opportunity to go after the bad eggs. So you can have a situation, he tells us, with the downtown ordinances, which are coming up on Tuesday with the street performers, you can't do this and you can't do that. Because what's going to happen is people will do pretty much what they want, except where a problem develops, and then the police can move in and use the laws. And they can selectively enforce them. And of course, this is bad to me for a couple things. First, it's unfair, but second of all, it's police state stuff. It allows police officers to make decisions that should really be in the hands of citizens and legislators.
That's right. And, like, again, as I say, these times are what I call Ashcroftian.
Mm-hmm.
They will go down in history as that. And so it starts from the top, and it works its way down into the city and in places of employment and things like that. And see, I don't know if you've ever read the resolution that we'd like to have passed by the city council.
Go ahead and read it if you'd like.
Okay, Sherry Connable, on behalf of People for a Free and Equal Downtown, presented at a meeting on October 14th, 2002. The meeting, I should say, was a meeting where the CPRB, had received requests from many citizens, letters, and also petitions with over 500 signatures, asking us to hold a meeting where we would hear from any citizen who wanted to talk about the issue of selective enforcement and police harassment downtown and around the city. So with that kind of mandate, I felt like it was necessary, it was essential that we have such a meeting and hear out everyone.
And also, I want to say, Mark, that a lot of this initiative came out of the downtown ordinances rush to judgment this summer, when the main issue raised at least at one of the stakeholders' meetings in the McPherson Center, meetings chaired by Riley and Porter, was that very same issue, police harassment and selective enforcement. And indeed, I was out there gathering signatures myself on this issue, and we forwarded those signatures to the Downtown Commission, to you, and to the City Council. And I must say that I think both you and the Downtown Commission responded. The City Council, of course, ignored the issue entirely. And you came up with, I should say, Sherry Connable presented this resolution, which you're about to read, right?
Right, right. And I want to say that's why we had the meeting, and we heard from a lot of citizens, people who, from various walks of life, including people who were homeless or people who were musicians and people who, one man said he was just a hippie and felt discrimination. and was targeted. And we had another man who said that he was stopped because of who he is. He did jaywalk or walk against the light. There was no traffic, but he was pulled over and stopped. And of course, you know, he broke the law. He can be stopped. But people do this all the time. And why are only certain people? I think the direction comes from the city council saying, okay, we have a lot of complaints about scruffy-looking people doing this or that. So we want these people to be...
thin out the scruffy-looking people.
Right. And so, in other words, that's what makes it so that when a police officer sees somebody in a leisure suit or, dressed like they have money or like they're, you know, well off, if they cross the street right in front of the officer, jaywalk, then, you know, they totally ignore it. But if they see certain individuals, they will, individuals who look like they're broke, they'll stop those people and give them an expensive ticket.
Read that resolution for us, Mark.
By the way, also we adopted, the Citizens Police Review Board adopted this on December 9th, 2002, to forward it to the city council.
And it was forwarded?
I glanced over the agenda for the 14th.
I don't think there's anything on the agenda.
And I didn't see it there.
I got a double check, but yeah.
Yeah, okay, it states this, whereas the city of Santa Cruz is a community that welcomes and celebrates diversity, and whereas the city of Santa Cruz is a community committed to treating all people with dignity and respect, and whereas the city of Santa Cruz is a community that believes deeply in the principles of fair and equal treatment under the law and of liberty and justice for all, and whereas the city of Santa Cruz is a community that will not tolerate discrimination in any form against any class of people, and whereas selective enforcement of the law, whether local, state, or federal, that targets certain groups of people is a form of discrimination that has enormously destructive and unfair consequences, and whereas selective enforcement of the law, whether local, state, or federal, in fact denies the sacred principles of liberty and justice for all and of fair and equal treatment under the law, now, therefore, be it resolved that the city of Santa Cruz reaffirms its commitment to non-discrimination in any form against any individual or group of people based on race, color, national origin, religion, creed, gender, sexual orientation, age, economic status, appearance, lifestyle choices, or any other class-based category, and that, therefore, the city of Santa Cruz resolves that selective enforcement of the law, whether local, state, or federal, against any such individual or group of people will not be tolerated, nor will any city funds be spent to support such enforcement. And furthermore, that the city of Santa Cruz resolves to fully honor, in all ways possible, the inviolable principle of non-discrimination with fair and equal treatment under the law and liberty and justice for all. I mean, that's it.
Wow. How many? What was the vote on this?
On the CPRB?
Yes.
It was unanimous. We unanimously voted to support it, to adopt it, and to pass it on to the city.
Of course, there
council.
Was nothing in the paper about this at all. Nothing in the Sentinel. Nothing in the Metro. I don't think there was anything in the Good Times either. And I've often said, and I've encouraged you, and I've not been able to get you to do this, that press conferences are a way to go here, particularly on these important things, or maybe getting the staff to put out press releases or something on the issue. I think the city council needs pressure to do this. I think simply handing them this resolution through a back channel, particularly given the Rotkin-dominated new council, as I call it, or maybe you don't consider Rotkin-dominated. I consider him the man with the most years. Rotkin, Kennedy, Matthews, I think, are going to be the...
Well, I want to tell you some of the people who support this resolution.
Go ahead.
One of them is Ray Newkirk, who publishes the Green Press. Scan has just sent me an email supporting the resolution. Bonnie Moore from the union that I think UTU, who also was a city council candidate a few years back. Let's see, who else? We have people for... in other words, what I have in front of me is, if I could find it under the stack of papers, is a list of about 20 people and organizations who are prominent in this community.
Well, it's hard to find anybody who, you know, I'm sure that you publicly, although I guess Scott Kennedy might say, oh, well, you got to selectively enforce because you can't get after everyone. I mean, with the camping ban, they selectively enforce because they haven't got the resources to go after everyone, and besides, it gives them a chance to be humane. That's the kind of argument you're going to get in response to this. But I think generally you're right. You know, everybody worth anybody is going to support such a resolution, except, of course, for the city council, which is on close terms with the police department and relies a lot on the city manager, Dick Wilson, who's a buddy of Steve Belcher's.
I've sent copies also to people outside of Santa Cruz who are in the ACLU and the National Association for Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement.
How about the NAACP?
So far, I have not spoken to him, chair, David Clater, but I will be speaking to him this week.
Any Latino groups?
I have not gotten any email back from the groups that I've emailed.
Like Watsonville, I think, would have some groups that might be interested. Maybe even the mayor of Watsonville might be a person to go to. You know?
Perhaps. I also have people like a school board member, CC Panero. Scott Kennedy actually, well, he didn't say he supported it. He said he didn't support the language as proposed, and he suggested some changes.
What did he suggest changing?
Some of the stuff was grammatical type things, like things that he felt were redundant.
What about no funds shall be appropriate?
That part is excluded from his recommendation.
Right. Of course. He wants a toothless recommendation, just like he proposed a toothless police review board and delayed it from 1992 to 1994. I got to say this, Mark, that I was going through the newspapers a couple days ago in the library reviewing the Butchie Baker scandal case back in 1991-92, when Baker was accused by 9 women of sexually abusive and harassing searches and other behaviors. Baker was, of course, quickly promoted, given a clean bill of health by the DA, the grand jury, and the IA. However, the thing that was interesting was Kennedy rushed in. Initially, there was a city council subcommittee that was supposed to be independently examining charges against Baker, which 9 women swore that he had sexually improperly searched them and harassed them. And you had to believe 9 women lied about this whole issue, if you're going to believe, it seems to me, Baker's side of the story on this issue, and Belcher, the police chief's side of the story, and Dick Wilson's side of the story, because these are the people who are on the other side. Instead of this whole thing, Kennedy put together, claimed, oh, we're going to have a Citizens Police Review Board, and then he delayed that board for 2 years and removed significant teeth from the board,
right,
as you know, independent investigation, mandatory public hearings.
Well, as I've said to you before, after going to the national conference, National Association for Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement in Cambridge, Massachusetts in November, and saw people there from over 100 cities in the United States, big and small, who had some form of citizen oversight of police, I was almost embarrassed that ours, we come from, you know, everyone's heard of Santa Cruz, even you know, on a national level, and expect us to be like Berkeley, sort of a front runner, like, you know, like a trailblazer in human rights and civil rights. And I was embarrassed of the fact that ours was the weakest and least funded of all everybody I talked to.
It was a Kennedy device. Essentially, it derailed the investigation of Baker, and also it derailed investigation of people who were assaulted by police in the 1994 police riot against the sit-down people who protested the downtown ordinances. One woman miscarried, another man had his ribs broken. But I have to turn to you and ask you a serious question, because, for example, I have a complaint coming up tomorrow, which you're going to be voting on in closed session. And I'd be saying the same thing to you at the mic, so I'm not doing anything inappropriate, I think, to bring this to your attention. My complaint is about the beating of Norman Friedberg, who was beaten for essentially so-called resisting arrest in the infamous breadcrumb incident in June of last year, where he was eating at the Food Not Bombs meal, fed the pigeons some bread, and then was attacked by police after he refused to take a littering citation.
Yeah, and this is after he already picked up the breadcrumbs and put them in the trash.
Indeed, that's what the claim was of various people. I have about 6 different witness accounts on tape. I don't know if I can muster them all by tomorrow. I don't know if I want to bother, and I'll tell you the reason. You should have a public hearing on this. And for you to claim, oh, my board is so weak it can't have a public hearing, as you and I both know, is bullshit. You haven't said that tonight.
Well, Robert, you know, like...
But you can vote for a hearing, and yet in your many months on this board, you have never, never voted for a public hearing on any single complaint. Is that not the truth?
That's the truth.
Well, tomorrow I'm hoping you'll change that pattern and say, time for a public hearing on this issue.
Now,
you haven't heard the issue, I know. Let me ask you this. At what point in your discussions behind closed doors does the question of a public hearing vote come up? At the beginning, at the end, in the middle?
Well, you mean at the...
In the closed hearings.
At the closed hearings. Well, see, it's like this. I feel that in order to have a hearing, the amount of resources and time...
Before you explain that, Mark, I'm just asking you a technical question. When your board votes whether or not to have a public hearing, does it do so at the very beginning? Does it do so in the end? When does it do so?
We would do that in open session, and we would do, and it would be on the agenda.
Now, it's interesting. If you would do that in open session, then that means you've been essentially violating, if not the law, then the expectation of the community, and not just you, but every other board. Because I have repeatedly asked for public hearings and numerous complaints I have made, and not once has the board even had a vote in an open session on that issue. So I must assume you're wrong on that you actually would hold those votes in closed session.
No, we don't hold we have not voted on such a thing. It's been something that it's basically my discretion on those things, and I, due to the fact that there's a tremendous amount of energy and resources that have to be spent on such a thing, I want to make sure that I'm not having a public hearing, especially since most of us are working people or trying to make a living, and we volunteer at least 20 to 40 hours a week doing this. I want to make sure that it's something that really affects people's lives. I want to deal with things that are like cases of violence, something very serious.
Mark, how can you expect the community to support a Citizens Police Review Board, which in all its 7 years, and there have been shootings and beatings and complaints of excessive force throughout that period of time, has never even had a public vote on a public hearing? And I think you're wrong. I think there were votes in private, by the way, that at least maybe other chairs handled this matter differently.
Well, I haven't seen any.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is that in the very process, you may remember that Bob Guzley and I earlier were talking about process. If you don't even do people who take the time to bring complaints to your board the courtesy of holding a vote, if it's all a discretionary matter with you as chair making a decision as to whether there'll be a public hearing, why should people bother with this additional level of layer of bureaucracy? You see what I'm saying?
Which level?
You. The Citizens Police Review Board.
Why should they come?
In other words, why bother if when they ask for a public hearing, you're just going to make a silent, quiet, discretionary finding yourself off to the side and not, bring it up to the closed board, even to the closed board. I would say bring it to the open board.
On the board, Robert, the thing is that what I'm looking for and what I think is most effective are the cases. Every case is serious, and every case means something to people who are involved in it.
But no case is serious enough for a public hearing?
Well, there are some cases that involve extreme cases of violence against citizens, including being killed. And I think that those things, in my mind...
Are we
going to
wait till someone's killed?
No, I'm not waiting. There's already been people killed.
Right.
And
I haven't heard you bring that up for a public hearing either.
Well, there are processes involved, and things don't happen necessarily on your time schedule.
Hey, you've been on the board for a year. How long is this supposed to take, Mark?
Well, part of it is that... Yeah, I've been on the board for a year, but there's also this part that I believe that we're not fully supported by the city of Santa Cruz, and there are roadblocks that are put in our way many times. And so that's one of the reasons why I do not want to hold a public hearing about the issue of whether somebody chalked in the gutter or anything.
What about somebody gotten beaten, had the pants beaten off him and was pepper sprayed on Pacific Avenue for dropping breadcrumbs? Don't you think that might be worth a public hearing?
That's very serious, yes. And I'd like to, and when that case comes...
Are you
going
to allow a vote on that tomorrow and determine not to make a discretionary finding yourself?
When that case comes to us...
It comes to you tomorrow. It's on your agenda for tomorrow, closed session.
I
guess you haven't checked.
Well, you see, I think that it would be more important for us to look at it first in closed session before we hold a hearing. Now, the problem with that...
I have no problem with that. I think I agree with you. What I'm saying is...
I'll tell you what the problem is.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That between, like, some things have been... if we get this in January and take it to closed session and make a decision on it, then we'd have to, the first chance we'd get to deal with it would be in February. And
unless you hold a special meeting.
Unless I hold a special meeting. Mm-hmm. And that's possible. And one of the things that's going on is that my term ends at the end of January.
Mm-hmm.
I may be reappointed. If I'm reappointed, we'll go ahead with this. If I'm not, then I don't know what the new people will do. The other thing is that during this midterm budget reassessment or budget review that they do mid-fiscal year...
you may not be funded, I understand.
We may not be funded.
Well, I'm talking independently of all that. In fact, it's not really independent because I think a lot of the support you'll get from the community is if they see you're not, you know, you're actually trying to do something and then being thwarted. But if you're not even bothering to try to do something, and I mean, I know you're trying to do something. I know you have an agenda that looks to a stronger board, and I know that you are concerned about issues of racial profiling that are not being addressed.
Those have been my major, I've spent most of my energy trying to make a stronger board, one that does have teeth. I'm trying to grow teeth in this.
But it's all invisible, Mark. It's invisible to the community unless you bring it out in some ways that people can see.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do it behind closed doors. You will have Rotkin and Kennedy and Porter and Riley and Fitzmaurice and Premack. They're not your allies in any of this. They're your opponents. And they're only going to move if there is a strong, loud, persistent pressure from the community and maybe even from outside the community. And it's a difficult problem for you. But I think that the, you know, I've told you before, the way to proceed from one person's perspective is to press conferences, start holding public hearings, start making open requests. I saw you beginning to do that, by the way, in November when you demanded of Police Chief Belcher, not just you, but the board demanded that they return the files on the Quentin Martin case. Or is that what Quentin Martin was his name?
That's correct.
This is the man
killed.
Shot dead a year and a half ago.
Yes.
And I'm still looking for the report that discusses the issue of you know, rumors have been circulating about a gun that was not operable, and why was he shot when he was found with a non-operable gun, or maybe a demand from the CPRB that the district attorney's report be made public, as it was in the John Dine case under Mayor Celia Scott. Yet I look on your current agenda and I find zilch.
Yeah.
I've got the agenda right here. You know, I know you're a person who works part time at this, and I know, I mean, most of the time you're struggling just to keep ends together, but what have you got on your agenda? You have a useless CSO amendment that has been kicking around the CPRB for 5 years,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, is fine, but you've spent so many hundreds of hours on this. Who cares?
Well, there's likely to be a special meeting called after this meeting, because the agenda, the way it turned out this time, I think was a fluke. And it's not the agenda that I wanted to see.
Interesting.
There were other things on the agenda, which are administrative problems.
I know that the staff was away for a couple weeks or something.
Yeah, and I was away. I was out of town. I got back into town actually too late. The agenda had already been sent by the time I was able to request any input into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm supposed to be the person who finalizes it, but that's another matter. I don't want to talk about that right now.
Somebody else finalized it. Okay.
What I want to talk about, though, is the resolution that we're talking about, the accountable resolution.
Right, but remember, this is neither on your agenda coming up, which I wish it were again for more testimony, and it's not on the city council agenda, as far as I know, either. So
it's not on this agenda. We probably will
have a special agenda,
have a special meeting.
Oh, good. Okay.
And because this is very important to us, we've spent a lot of time on it, and we've felt out people in the community to find out how they feel about it, and we've gotten support for that resolution from like Bob Guzzley, who
mm-hmm.
just left. And from the San Francisco Office of Citizens Complaints, one of their members, one of their investigators, wrote to us that it was, she says, what's not to support.
It seems to me you also, by the way, need to put on this agenda. I know you had a presentation by what's her name from San Jose, the auditor, who.
That's Teresa Guerrero Daly.
She looks like she has a stronger position than you, but she actually it's weaker in terms of the community's ability to input. She has more powers herself.
It doesn't have visibility, which is something that we think is important for this community.
Right, and it also doesn't have accessibility. I don't know how accessible she is to people. Now, I haven't heard from San Jose advocates other than her. She put on a very good show, but then she gets quite a lot of money to put on a very good show, and and you'll never get anybody funded to that extent.
Well, interestingly enough,
the way she's
as
funded.
Far as how these boards operate, I have a complaint lodged with the independent auditor of the city of San Jose because of an incident that happened with me on my way to a national conference of citizen oversight. I was stopped at the San Jose airport and held for a while, and maybe many of your listeners may have heard that there is a list going about of no-fly individuals. People who may be Green Party members and things like that, and they are not permitted to get on an airplane. And then there are other people, many. I thought it was just myself, but there are dozens of people who have been stopped at the airports and delayed and held up and missed their flights and had to spend long hours at the airport, and so I'm not the only one who went through this. I was accused by the police at the time, the San Jose Police Department, attempting to smuggle a weapon on board an airplane.
When was this?
Absurd. This is on my way to the National Conference of Police Oversight.
This should be on the front page of the Sentinel, Mark.
Yeah, I was on city business. And so they confiscated some of my belongings.
What weapon did they confiscate?
Well, this weapon that they confiscated was a little gadget that's like shaped like a credit card that had like a bottle opener in it and an inch and a half blade.
This is your box cutter, eh?
A compass, a magnifying glass, and other things. And I've seen people.
You could have set a fire on the plane with that magnifying glass.
Yeah, I know, but I've seen people in line before trying to get on planes, and they had scissors and sharp objects, and they were just simply told, "You can't bring this. We'll have to confiscate it, or you can take it and mail it to yourself, or we'll check it for you in your baggage." But in my case, I was held for several hours at the airport until the final flight of the evening had left and ended up spending 16 hours there. So I lodged a complaint with the San Jose auditor's office. And one of the problems with that, and I've heard that the auditor model being touted a lot, like Ed Porter kept bringing it up, we need an auditor model. Well, I made my complaint with the auditor's office, and they tape recorded my interview over the phone. Next thing I know, I get a call from the police department, and they said, "Well, we have your testimony here, and it belongs to them."
They're just overseers of the IA, just like you guys are in Santa Cruz.
We're not really even overseers.
Right. You get to review their reports.
I'll tell you the reason why I believe the CPRB is so weak. The main reason is because what we do is we review cases that have already been reviewed by the internal affairs, and that's the totality of the information that we're given.
But you have the option to hold public hearings.
That's correct.
That's what you need to do. Uh-huh. As soon as possible, as many times as possible, as regularly as possible.
And like in many cities, they have people who are on the payroll, who are paid more money than our entire board is funded for a year. They have several people who look over these things, who are able to pick out the things that are very important and then hold hearings. The rest of us have to go to work. Our office hours are very limited, 8 to 12 every day. This is not just the time that the public is.
These are all good points, Mark, but I mean, I'm afraid you have to work within those parameters. If you're going to proceed, I don't see any other way than proceeding with the public hearings route. And I think you better move fast on this one before they either fire you or dissolve the board. I mean, that would be my thought. I was gonna say something. We were in the middle of a suggestion that what should also come back on the agenda, it seems to me, at your special meeting, inviting people down from San Francisco from these other stronger boards that present testimony for a stronger board. And because you've had so far at your board is this testimony from the auditor over in San Jose. We've talked about her, and you've talked about
how... We also had a presentation by Mark Schlossberg, who was...
ACLU?
ACLU, the Northern California Office of Police Practices.
Aha. Uh-huh. Did I miss that one? That was at the same time?
It was the same meeting.
Huh.
We had a presentation from him, and his was pretty good, and he laid out some things that we needed to have in order to have a strong board, which was including budget, including powers to investigate or to get involved in questioning and things like that.
Why not continue discussion of that item at this special agenda meeting? I mean, if you keep these hot issues alive, why isn't the police force coming back with its use and display of force policy? Right now, the police don't have to account when they, you know, show their weapons, right?
And even though at that meeting the chief did agree to do that, I believe believe he did agree to give us that information and said it was forthcoming. We haven't received it so far.
He's been saying that for a year and a half, I think.
That's true.
And you get the same thing with racial profiling. We heard that, you know, there's going to be some plan as soon as they get the software to work, as soon as they get the grants.
I feel that our vice chair has probably felt slighted, the fact that he has been looking into racial profiling, and he's been talking to the chief, and the chief said that invited him to be a part of the task force. And the first next thing he hears about it is on the front page of the Sentinel yesterday that, oh, it's in place. Well, he was never consulted, even though he was asked, invited to, and accepted being a part of the task force that brought this forward.
Again, you need to independently, as I suggest, whether you use the press, you have your own community meetings, whether you invite your own witnesses and have special meetings, it's going to be something that you guys, on your spare time, wherever that is, get together and do it. Because it's not going to happen. It's going to happen in spite of the police department, in spite of the city manager's office, and in spite of the city council. I think that that is really clear. Another thing I want to ask you about is citizens' arrests. I brought up this issue, and I think I may have emailed to you my letter to Chief Belcher, which requests information. A relatively clear question I put to him in November was, what's the process for a citizen who wants to make an arrest? This goes back to selective enforcement, too, of another sort, where the police will take a citizen's arrest from a merchant of a person on the street, but they won't take the alternate sort of thing, when in fact anybody, according to the law, is allowed to make a citizen's arrest if she or he sees a crime committed in their presence. Now, if they're lying about it, they're making a false police report, and they're guilty of a misdemeanor,
right.
And that's a whole other issue. But the police officer's responsibility is to take that down. Now, when we asked Belcher directly about that, he refused to give us his process. You may remember, you were in the room.
Yes.
And I asked you to put that on the next agenda. It didn't appear. It hasn't appeared on this agenda. What I'm saying is, if you can devote even small amounts of time on each agenda to continuing issues, to kind of continue to put pressure on the police department and the city council to act on things they need to act on, rather than see them get deep-sixed and buried with nothing happening, I think the public is going to get more interested, the media is going to get more interested, and I think the community will give you more support.
Well, you know, I agree with you. When you have a dozen important issues to deal with, do you want to give each one a little bit of time, or do you want to try to narrow down on one issue and give it a lot of time and have more of a chance of it going somewhere?
Or you can compromise. But remember, none of this is going anywhere unless there's a lot of pressure, no matter how much time you spend on it.
See, we have to ask ourselves, we have to ask the city, what is your commitment to this? Nationwide, basically talking to the experts, they say that this is important, this is necessary. The United States Department of Justice says it's necessary. The Justice Department, they produced a video called Racially Biased Policing, among one of them, and they feel that citizen oversight is important. That's the United States government. We're talking about the people who are bombing Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and they feel it's important. And we have the experts, the ACLU and the National Association of Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement, saying that this is necessary. And the citizen oversight of police has grown across the nation over the last 30 years to well over 100 cities, and it's still growing. And at the same time, we have our city and our progressive mecca here, people saying, well, we don't need this.
Well, the people that are saying it are the people who I think are in the positions of power who would like to see that it's the old boy and the diminishing old girl. There aren't that many old girls at the top left, as far as I can say. I guess Seal Cirillo's up there. But go ahead.
One thing I wanted to say is that the main reason I called was to talk about the Conable resolution,
right.
About the resolution that I would feel very disappointed in this community if we can't get a resolution passed by the city council after passing a resolution against the war in Iraq, after passing a resolution against the Homeland Security or Patriot Act, and after passing a resolution in support of medical marijuana, that we can't get a resolution passed that says this city will not tolerate discrimination against any group or class of people within reason. I mean, of course, you know, people may want to discriminate against SUV drivers or whatever. I don't know. But the thing is that we can't get that passed in this city where we say that selective enforcement is a form of discrimination and this city will not tolerate it, nor will we spend any of our money selectively enforcing the law or discriminating against people.
I agree with you,
Mark.
But prepare for heartache.
Well, you know, like I'm realistic, even though I'm an idealist.
I mean, it seems to me what you need to do is call in like national figures or regionally strong black and Latino activists to come to Santa Cruz in public engagements and talk about this issue, even if it's only CPRB meetings, in ways that draws the public, in the same way that other media stars draw the public, who have strong records on this issue.
Okay.
Former Black Panthers, things of this sort.
Well, not just that. I just wanted to mention some of the people who support this resolution that
right.
I read a little earlier. Bob Guzzley, who was just there, Sherry Tony from the OCC in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
And also the Coalition for Community Commons, Cassandra Brown and Craig Metz. We got support from...
Huff, Homeless United Friendship and Freedom supports that resolution.
Indeed. And let's see, Joe Grossman. We have... I have a teacher, an educator, a couple of teachers, actually several teachers who support it. And the woman who, the student who put forth the measure, the resolution opposing the Patriot Act, she supports it. SCAN supports it. The Santa Cruz Peace Coalition supports it.
Women's International League for Peace and Freedom?
Well, I haven't heard back from them.
Mm-hmm.
And from different people who say
things... How about gay groups, student groups?
That's something that still we haven't heard back from.
Well, you're doing a good... It sounds like, you know,
We're putting out a lot of information, putting out a lot of requests.
Definitely. I'd invite you today to come to the Street Performers Group, and you'll get their endorsement. They're at the Wired Wash Cafe, 2 o'clock today.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's next to the Saturn Cafe.
And also, one of the members of the Philadelphia, which is one of the models that I actually like of citizen oversight, because I got a chance to watch them in action when I was back east, we got from one of their members support. And from various people, we're getting support, people in the community. This is obviously not just some... whatever they think, whether they think it's some kind of crackpot thing, it's not.
Might be good to put an ad in the paper, you know, supporting us, if you can get a happy donor to do it. And if anybody out there wants to donate money to put an ad in the paper about no selective enforcement, thank you very much, in Santa Cruz, give a call to 423-HUFF or call, I guess, Mark Halfman, Police Review Board. I don't know if this is appropriate, but the Police Review Board, you know, presumably... I don't know if you can take a private donation. A private individual could certainly put this in the paper as a private action. That certainly could be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage, I support that. If anybody wanted to call me, I would give you a copy of the resolution and show you how to do it. 423-4833. Mark, I want to keep talking to you. I have a problem.
Right.
We had a long-distance caller from Manteca who wants to call in. Probably, I've already overstepped him by half an hour, so
okay.
He may have given up on us.
Sorry,
but I really, and I gave up, I postponed him for a good reason, because what you have to say, much as I'm interested in Manteca, is very important, very contemporary, and you know it's coming up in this month, and it's a crisis. And in fact, tomorrow at the CPRB meeting, I hope you're going to be somehow making some of these points and trying to get some support from the board for some of these initiatives. Is that likely to happen?
That is likely, even though right now that is not on the agenda. It could very well. I'm looking for a way to make it something that we can discuss.
And you could bring up an emergency item, given the fact that there seems to be a possible turnover in the board coming up and a possible motion to remove the budget. I mean,
yep.
To, you know, cut it out of the budget. If you have, you know, information this is happening, I think it's completely appropriate for you to put an emergency item on the agenda, just make an emergency finding and do it by a 5-2 vote.
Well, let me say something real quick.
Mm-hmm. If that's a process.
That I wanted to say, one of the people supporting the resolution is Sarah Phelan from Metro Santa Cruz.
Right.
And what she wrote to me is that it sounds good to me, and here's the important part. She says, it seems to me that it's also a good way for the city to address harassment, either verbal or sexual, which was one of the given reasons for developing the downtown ordinances, because it calls for non-discrimination. If people are harassing women or gays, if individuals are, or whether it's the police, whoever it is, the city of Santa Cruz should not tolerate it, and that's what we're asking them to say.
And indeed, if you look at somebody as conservative and as disinterested in this issue, usually as Bruce Bratton, I think 2 issues ago in the Metro, he was talking about police harassing women downtown.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough.
Okay.
You know, Mark,
well,
are you going to be around to in the next hour? Because you're welcome to call back after 12:55 if you want to resume this conversation.
Well, you call me later on. And after you're off the air.
All righty. You want to leave that number on the Huff line for me?
Okay.
Hey, Mark, Half Moon of the Citizens Police Review Board, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, the Marathon Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides Show. I am the Robe, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse. I am on the air 3.5 hours on Sunday, go on until 1:30. At 1:30, I'm going to have a special interview with Utah Phillips. He'll be coming on the air talking to John Malkin. Stay tuned for that one, or hustle on over to the Wired Wash Cafe to be a part of the street performers activity. Let's see what we got on the line. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi there, this is David Brown again.
Hey David, you've been very patient. I'm terribly sorry. Gosh, I mean, I thought about you half an hour ago, and I had this guy who never calls in, or very rarely calls in. It was the head of our Citizens Police Review Board, and that's the reason that I put you off. I'd like to apologize to you publicly.
Oh, no apology necessary, because I'm calling from an area where I really can't pick up your feed. I'm having a hard time picking it up, so I was calling blind.
You probably got a lot of busy signals.
Yeah.
Yeah, we only got one line here. Thank you for being persistent.
No problem. I apologize for calling earlier.
So where are you calling from?
Manteca, California.
Where is Manteca?
It's about 10 miles south of Stockton.
And how big is it?
City of 50,000.
About the size of Santa Cruz.
Is it? Yeah, I mean, I know it seems like Santa Cruz is a little bigger.
55,000, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. And are you kind of isolated from other cities, or are you surrounded by other cities?
The cities around...
What's the racial split?
Predominantly white. There are, I think it's about 20-25% Latino, and small portions of everybody else. My particular neighborhood has got a very large Sikh population. That's a growing population here.
Mm-hmm. And a very large what population?
The Sikhs.
Oh, Sikhs. I gotcha. No doubt part of the Afghani rescue operation that the U.S. has been performing.
Oh, well, we do have some Afghanis here, too.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to call the FBI immediately. Will you hold on? So you're calling about, as I understand it, a new go-to-sleep, go-to-jail law that they're trying to put forward to cleanse the community of the wrong kind of poor people?
Yes. I had found out about it, the first reading of it last week. It was January 6th. And so I went down and, well, I called you guys first to see if I can get a little bit of tactical insight before I went down there, and it turns out I was the only citizen to speak against the proposed ordinances. And what they'll do is they'll make it a misdemeanor to sleep on public property or private property without permission anywhere within the city limits, and it'll also be a misdemeanor if you were to hide any possessions under a bush or something to that effect on public or private property.
Now, do you actually have the wording of the ordinance, David?
Yeah, actually, I do. I'll have to flip through a couple pages of paperwork here, but other than that, I do have it.
I'd be curious to hear it.
Let's see. It's a letter from the police chief, recommendation prohibiting camping in public places. He tied it in with another one, like banning RV parking in front of certain properties. So it's, okay, here we go. The purpose. The streets and public areas within the city should be readily accessible and available to residents and the public at large. The use of these areas for camping purposes or storage of personal property interferes with the rights of others to use areas for which they were intended. Such activity can constitute a public health and safety hazard, which adversely impacts neighborhoods and commercial areas. Camping on private property without the consent of the owner, proper sanitary measures, and for other than a minimal duration adversely affects private property rights, as well as public health, safety, and welfare of the city. The purpose of this chapter is to maintain streets, parks, and other public-private areas within the city in a clean, sanitary, and accessible condition, and to adequately protect the health and safety and public welfare of the community. And, well, from there it'll go on and it goes a bunch of definitions, but you can see right in the purpose that it says that homelessness is a problem and not a result of a problem. And it's also making illegal something that's already illegal, which is camping on somebody's private property without permission. That's known as trespassing.
Now, where does it mention homelessness again?
Well, it says in this line here that the use of these areas for camping purposes or storage of personal property interferes with the rights of others to use these areas for which they were intended. And that camping on private property without the consent of the owner,
right.
You know, yada, yada, yada.
Right, so the word homeless doesn't appear, but in fact it refers to homeless people. Again, go on to read the actual wording of the law in terms of what it criminalizes.
Okay, let's see. It is unlawful and a public nuisance. This is the actual section.
Mm-hmm.
It is unlawful and a public nuisance for any person to camp, occupy camp facilities, or use camp paraphernalia in the following areas: any public property or any private property. And then it says it's not intended to prohibit overnight camping on private residential property by friends or family, as long as there is consent, and it's not more than one consecutive night.
No, it's not more than what?
Not more than one consecutive night. So if you are a property owner and you have a friend that wants to sleep out back for the night.
Oh, just one night, huh?
Yeah.
One night, and then granny hit the road, huh?
Right. After that, it's a misdemeanor.
Well, here we have three nights. So actually, in Santa Cruz, you can sleep in a backyard indefinitely. You can't sleep in a place that's open from the street, and you can park in a driveway for up to 3 calendar days or days per calendar month. Not that that's any good either, but how do they define camp?
Well, they've got a whole bunch of definitions here. Let's see. Definitions. Camp means to place, pitch, or occupy camp facilities, to live temporarily in a camp facility, or outdoors, to use camp paraphernalia. A camp facility includes, but isn't limited to, tents, huts, vehicles, vehicle camping, outfits, or temporary shelter. Camp paraphernalia includes bedrolls, tarps, cots, beds, sleeping bags, hammocks, or cooking facilities.
So, we do you one better here. It's illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night. Even if you do so naked, it is illegal to sleep. I suppose especially if you do so naked, but if you... sleep in your own clothing, even if you don't have a blanket, tarp, or any other camping paraphernalia, it is still a $54 crime. But it's not a misdemeanor like it is in, it's Manteca?
Yeah, Manteca.
Manteca.
Spanish for lard. They thought it meant butter when they settled the place.
Huh. Well, I think that I can make some nasty comments here, but
yeah.
I won't. Piggish comments, in fact. But, yeah, a misdemeanor, I can tell you, let me ask you before, I'm going to give you some suggestions on this. First of all, what's the current law? I mean, what are they doing when they find some poor person sleeping in a public place now?
Well, you know, for the most part, I've been commuting and pretty isolated from the issue. So this past week after the council meeting, I wrote an editorial in the paper, which was published the following day, and I got some pretty good response, especially from some homeless people. And so I went out into town and tried to get my finger on the pulse of what is going on in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And... what they've told me is that especially around Christmas time, the police went through, and when they found people sleeping, they roused them, arrested them, and they confiscated their possessions. I don't know what's happened to their possessions.
What charges do they use?
I really don't know what they were charged with. It might have been trespass. I really don't know.
Have you talked to any of the people who wrote this law to ask them why they are pressing for it at this time?
Only at the council meeting. They
you might
said
call
that there was a concern, and there was one council member who was appointed recently after his predecessor was convicted of bribery.
Uh-huh.
So he was appointed to replace him for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And
going from bad to worse, huh?
Yeah, and he said that he is going to press forward with it because he has seen the people in our parks, and he is scared of them.
He's
so,
scared of them.
Yes, he said that he would not go in our own parks during the day seeing some of those scary people. So
yeah, but the law doesn't outlaw sleeping, so the scary people, if they lie around without blankets, can continue to scare people.
Right,
if
so I guess technically, yeah, you could technically sleep. I didn't realize that, you know, I guess as long as you didn't have any camping paraphernalia.
What's the average temperature at night in Manteca?
It rarely drops below freezing, but I will say that there is only one shelter in our city of 50,000.
And how many people does that shelter accommodate?
It's a 7 one-bedroom apartments, and it's limited only to families. So right now it has 27 people, 19 of which are children. They've been booked full since 1996 with a 2-week waiting list at least.
And
so
how many people in town would you estimate are homeless?
In talking to the to the actually on the street homeless, as opposed to people that are able to go to campsites and couch surf and things like that. They tell me there's about 30 to 40 chronic homeless in the community without even a vehicle.
30 to 40?
That's what they say.
It's a pretty small population for a town of 50,000. There's a lot of accommodations for everybody. Is housing cheap?
No, housing is, cheap compared to Santa Cruz, but it is getting very expensive. There has not been an apartment built in our city in 15 years, yet we're growing exponentially because as people get forced down to the bay, we migrate out to the valley because we're still close enough.
The commute time to the bay?
To San Jose is 2 hours.
Wow. And SROs, do you have, like, hotels?
There are some some low-end hotels, like little units, but my understanding is they're $50 a night. That's the cheapest.
So you don't actually have hotels, real hotels, not motels, but hotels?
Oh, like a Holiday Inn?
You hardly see them around anymore, but they used to be, the big hotel downtown with four stories, that sort of thing.
Yeah, we don't have that downtown, no.
Wow. What about social service agencies? Do you have any, did any social service agency people come to the meeting and say, please don't arrest these poor people for doing what they need to do to survive?
No, mine was the only voice there. Even the homeless shelter operators didn't come.
Did you talk to them off times and ask them why they didn't oppose this?
I did come down to them the following day to find out what exactly the homelessness situation in Manteca is, and they told me that there are three soup kitchens, Salvation Army and evangelical types, and this one shelter, and that one shelter can only take families. And so they said that they have, they're working up a plan to create a drop-in shelter that could take, like, say, a single person or a couple if they were coming in and
they're working on it.
They're working on the idea, but it's going to take, they got to get the space, they've got to get staffing, they're going to need funding. And they said their funding is dropping. Normally they would get $50,000 in July from the state, and that it will be cut to $10,000 in July.
Wow. Well, soup kitchens are good places to organize. And so, do you have a Food Not Bombs in town?
No.
You have a free radio station?
No, we are in the heart of just about the most conservative part of California. My my entire council and mayor are all Republican. No Democrats even ran for office. There are 36 registered Greens. I'm one of them. But
how about the Greens? Are they supporting your efforts?
The Greens are, they're supporting my efforts by they put the column up on their website, and they're now aware of the issue, but there are no active Greens in my city, only in the county. So I would have to drive up to Stockton.
Boy.
And most of those Greens are Stocktonians and therefore not really involved in my city's issue.
How about the ACLU and other civil rights organizations? Anybody, or even conservative civil rights organizations like the Pacific Legal Foundation? Any of them interested in supporting civil rights here?
Well, I don't really know of any in this particular area, and I haven't contacted them. Really, I haven't been involved in the homelessness issue here in the past, but I saw that there was very few voices coming up to oppose this law, so I had to step up to the plate. Generally, I'm involved in some other issues. Well, indirectly, I'm involved in the affordable housing issues here in the city for the past 2 years. They've been steadily going through and rezoning all our high-density residential into single-family residential estates with four-car garages.
Which is essentially knocking people out?
Literally, yeah.
Well, let me ask you, sort of by the by, what's the feeling on the war? Is there a lot of support for the war?
In a conservative community, you would think there would be a lot of support for it. there is a lot more, Pledge of Allegiance going on in the city meetings and things like that. A little more patriotic grandstanding, but it seems to me like the editorials and the letters that are being written into the papers are still anti-war.
Interesting. I mean, there are numerous conservatives who oppose the war, and for good reason. We're talking with David Brown of Manteca, California, which is, I guess, somewhere between Stockton and Modesto. Is that right?
Yeah, it's about 75 miles east of San Jose, between Stockton and Modesto.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and perhaps in Manteca somebody's listening to it at www.microradio.net/FRSC, because that's where you would catch us on the web. We're talking about a camping ordinance that's coming back for a second reading, I guess, Tuesday night at what time at your council meeting?
Well, it won't be this Tuesday night. In fact, it was just last Tuesday that they read it, my understanding.
Another week, huh?
I think they actually have to move a little bit slower.
Good.
Because I think they're not going to be able to get to it until the 1st of February, around that point, you know, the first week of February. But I have to get a specific date still.
Well, a couple things might slow them down. If you can get an attorney who's interested in suing them, based upon the fact that, I think we talked about this before off air, you have inadequate shelter for the number of homeless people. And the way to start documenting that is to go to the, first of all, get three people to help you, because you'll completely burn out if you try to do it yourself. But if you can get somebody to help you, go to the soup kitchens and document how many people are homeless and how many people have shelter, and get sort of take a little tape recorder with you. Buy a tape recorder for $20 from Long's and start doing interviews with people, or if you want, making notes. Sometimes easier to make notes.
Mm-hmm.
Find out and then talk to some churches that put people up. I imagine there are a couple of churches who informally let people park in their parking lots.
No,
or
not that we know of.
How many churches are in the area?
Many. Many. In fact, I think 16 churches all donate money towards this one shelter.
What you might want to do is go to the shelter and get the names of the churches that donate, or it might even be public records, and then contact those churches by phone and ask them what they think of this new camping law, and, you know, how it squares with their Judeo-Christian perspective on things. We have like 200-odd churches in Santa Cruz, only a relative hand few of which support our interfaith satellite shelter program, which houses 160 people at night out of a homeless population of 1,000 to 2,000. So as you see, it's hard for me to believe you have 30 to 50 homeless people are in your town. I have to believe it's probably more like 500 at least. But
my number was, in just speaking to homeless people, I said, how many people do you have that are just chronically on the street? That's without a vehicle or anything.
Oh, I'm talking about
this doesn't include every waitress whose dad, you know, whose husband left and didn't pay child support, and now they're living out of an RV.
What about RVs and vehicles? Is it legal to sleep in a vehicle?
This is making it illegal to camp in a vehicle. This ordinance will make it illegal. Currently, it's not.
The other thing to do is to contact the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco. They are a group. And I'll give out their number in a moment if you've got a pencil.
Yep.
They are a group that puts out Street Sheet, the homeless newspaper in San Francisco, one of two, actually. Another group, American Friends Service Committee, puts out Street Spirit.
We do have an American Friends Service Committee up in Stockton.
There is a group to talk to. And also, well, the phone number for the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco is 415-346-3740. Give them a call. Tell them you need help. You need to get some legal advice on how to fight the camping ordinance that's being proposed. Fax it to them, because they have legal people up there who may or may not help you, but hopefully who will.
Right.
Another group to contact is Shock in Sacramento. And in order to contact them and a number of other groups, I'm going to give you a number, which I think I gave you before. I'm going to give it to you. I'll give it to you. It's actually the number of my producer, Becky Johnson, who keeps a lot of these records. Her number has been made public at other times, and she's in the book, so I don't think it's any secret to mention it over the air. It's 429-8529. If you want to give her a call and ask her how to contact Sacramento, how to contact, I think there's an activist in Stockton, actually, Nikki, I don't know her last name. You can call them for some local support. What you might want to do is get people starting to email your city council, particularly large organizations, saying this sucks, or if you're going to do this, be aware that you need alternate places for people to stay, because the next thing to do, of course, if they pass this law as a misdemeanor, is to use the ICORN decision. You familiar with the ICORN decision?
You mentioned it to me, and I testified about it, not specifically about it, but I said to them that an appeals court in Santa Ana kicked back a conviction on a guy who was convicted for sleeping on the grounds that sleeping was a biological necessity.
Mm-hmm.
So in my grounds, what I told them was, if we don't have any shelter beds, if a person has no choice, they must at some point sleep. And anything short of that is running a person out of town, which is illegal.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that you have the basis for really, these people don't respond to human arguments, sad to say. They respond to arguments about the pocketbook. And if you can show them large settlements from Miami, Florida's Pottinger decision, which you might want to look up on the Internet, Pottinger, P-O-T-T-I-N-G-E-R, Pottinger, large decision in 1992, finalized in 1998, which ruled there had to be safe sleeping zones in Miami, and it essentially came up with a consensual decree with the police that they would not even approach a homeless person unless they had a shelter bed on issues of life-sustaining behavior that would otherwise be illegal. That included not only sleeping, camping, but also urinating, defecating, lighting a fire, things of this sort. But unless they had alternatives, the police had to keep their hands off. That was the famous Clyde Atkins, federal judge, bless his heart, did that one way back in 92, and then finalized it in 98. Pottinger, P-O-T-T-I-N-G-E-R. In California, the Santa Ana case was called the Tobe case, T-O-B-E, and it was a good decision until it reached the Supreme Court, and then it was sort of turned back and screwed. The Tobe case actually found that camping laws violated the right to travel, the right to equal protection under the laws, and the right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment. But by the time it reached the Supreme Court, they found that, oh, if you've got just one person who is camping because he's out there doing recreational camping, then the law has a justification. And if you want to argue that it's inappropriately applied, you have to argue in the specific case. Then the specific case came up through the courts. That was the Eichhorn case of James Eichhorn in Santa Ana, who didn't have any other place to go, who the town wanted to drive away. And the court had a very eloquent decision, which you should read. I think you'd find it. It's E-I-C-H-O-R-N, Eichhorn. And they found that courts must not merely consider allowing a necessity defense, they must allow a necessity defense to be presented. That doesn't mean they have to accept it, but they have to allow all the elements to be advanced. There are six elements to a necessity defense, which we've talked about on the air before. You have to show that the act, which is, you admit that the act, you did the act, you admit the act is illegal, but you say you did it because there was a necessity to avoid a greater evil. I mean, as sleeping and camping is in Santa Cruz or in Manteca or in San Francisco or in Santa Ana or anywhere else where there's inadequate shelter. I mean, this leaves aside the whole question of nomads who are choosing a transient lifestyle because they have and should have the right to, but it just deals with the issue of people who just don't have shelter and there is no shelter and they fall asleep and they're suddenly criminals because they fall asleep. I don't think so. I mean, and neither did the Supreme Court in terms of saying in the Eichhorn case, he had no choice, you have to find him not guilty. And this decision was recited and properly used in the Santa Barbara Cooper and Ridley cases where two homeless people lived in their vehicles illegally under Santa Barbara law were found, and this wasn't even by a jury, which is even more surprising, was by a judge. The judge first said necessity defense doesn't hold, then the appeals court found, yes, it does. Now, in Manteca, if they pass your law, demand jury trials every single time. Then you take the case to it, and you're going to tie up these suckers big time. Of course, it also ties you up, so it's a double-edged sword. You should also consider, when you talk to Shock in Sacramento, and I'm hoping this is of interest to our listeners, and maybe it is for those of you who are sleeping outside and looking for legal defenses, there was a successful defense of a man up in Sacramento by attorney Kelly Tanalipi, who was on our radio show a couple months ago, what the heck was his name? It's escaping me right now. But the jury found that, there was a mistrial on one count and a not guilty on another. Then he was retried, and the judge inappropriately ruled out the necessity defense, and that case is being appealed. But Kelly has done a lot of work on these cases. When you talk to my producer, she'll be able to give you Kelly's phone number.
Well, I appreciate all the help you've given me here.
Sure, and I appreciate the information you're giving me about what's happening in Manteca.
Well, now it's up to me to get out there and start mobilizing the community and get the word out. We're 47% commutes, more than 45 miles each day, and you can imagine on a family what that does to community involvement. It just sucks it away if one out of every member of your family is driving 2 hours.
Yeah, but think of all the money that goes to the oil companies. Isn't that exciting?
I know. Yeah, well,
it helps fund the war in Iraq. Let's look at it that way.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get out there. We're just going to have to mobilize and start building.
Let me ask you one more question, David. In Santa Cruz, we're looking at the virtual criminalization of street performers, or I should say the severe regulation of street performers. Do you have any street performers in Manteca?
No, not at all. They would be roused out immediately.
And what happens if a person is a beggar on the street with a sign?
That is now illegal. That was made illegal 3 months ago.
And were there a lot of people doing that?
There was a handful, and the paper did a full expose on a man who was panhandling and then seen buying a DVD player in Kmart, and they had photos of him with a DVD player, and they essentially demonized everybody that panhandles, and then they...
Maybe you could send us some of the articles, both around panhandling, the new panhandling law, and some of the stuff around camping, and we can look at it. You also might consider writing an article about this issue for the next issue of Street Spirit, which is another major homeless newspaper that the American Friends Service Committee puts out in San Francisco. Talk to Becky about that as well.
Okay. All right. Is there a place where I can send the article to?
There is. And for anybody else who wants to send something to me, and you're listening to Bathrop's peer Robert Norse here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, talking with David Brown of Manteca, California, who's fighting the camping ban law coming up in early February at his city council. The address is Robert Norse, N-O-R-S-E, 309 Cedar Street, C-E-D-A-R, number 14B, as in boy, Santa Cruz, California, 95060.
All right. Thank you very much for your time. I got to take off because I got my kids here, but I really appreciate the help you've given me, and I will try and get my media stream fixed so I can tune in a little more often and stay wise on the issue.
Yay, keep up the good work.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. And as mentioned before, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And I ain't just kidding. A bakery, and maybe we can sleep in the mayor's kitchen. That's up there at Mission and Laurel Streets. I remember because I did a picket of Emily Riley's Good Things to Eat bakery about a year and a half ago when she was a year and a quarter ago, criminalizing people in their vehicles in Harvey West because they made old Father Hubbard, Don Hubbard of the Harvey West Residential Association, nervous out there, and he didn't like them in their vehicles parked at night. Even though they already have their sleeping ban, he wanted to put in a parking ban so their vehicles could be towed away, and they couldn't even think of parking between 5 and 7. And Emily just dashed that right in without any process or real hearings and passed it in the snap of the fingers. I think it was the first session after the summer was over in 2001. And Riley, you might remember, is also the person who urged strict enforcement of all ordinances along the river to get rid of Camp Paradise. And Emily Riley, of course, is one of the moving forces behind the one or two little things which involve doubling the forbidden space on all sidewalks for people who are sitting, who are peacefully spare changing, removing, making it illegal to have a sign on a sidewalk from a seated position in a group of two or after dark. This is Emily Riley. You made it illegal to hacky sack. Made it illegal to blow bubble, unless you are a professional bubble performer, and made it illegal to bounce a rubber ball on Pacific Avenue. Emily Riley, remember that name, that's Mayor Emily Riley. Her phone number is 420-5022. She's now the person who is supporting the move-along musicians law and the 10-foot forbidden zones. Bad news from our city council. Betrayal of the progressive platform on which she was voted in, and a betrayal of the civil rights of all Santa Cruzans, particularly street performers. A stupid betrayal. It's the most ridiculous thing. Another issue we're going to be talking about at the street performers meeting in about an hour, 2 o'clock at Wired Wash Cafe, is going to be, well, I brought it up on Thursday. Monday, the street performers met in the so-called stakeholders meeting, in which they were trying, and Riley showed up along with Vice Mayor Kennedy, to kind of consider how would different groups of people look at the situation, what are their needs, interests, wants, and concerns regarding street performers. And everybody put out lots of suggestions and did some role-playing, and they went through this for an hour and a half. And what we all found, of course, was that not one single merchant attended this meeting, except, of course, for the head of the Downtown Association, Keith, is it Holloway? I'm sorry, Keith, if I got your name wrong. I've invited Keith to be on the show at different times. He's going to give me a call back. And, of course, I haven't gotten that call back, but if I do, I'll be the first to tell you, as I will if I get a call back from Emily Riley, Ed Porter, Scott Kennedy, Mark Premack, Mike Rotkin, Cynthia Matthews, or Tim Fitzmaurice, the Gang of Seven that runs Santa Cruz. Actually, it's Dick Wilson that runs Santa Cruz, but they are the frontispieces for the city manager who actually runs the show, along with the police chief, Steve Belcher, head of the redevelopment agency, Seal Cirillo, and whoever's going to be head of the Parks and Rec now that retiring monarch Jim Lang, Lebensraum Lang, as I used to call him, has disappeared, along with the information on all the benches. Asked to find out what happened to half the benches on Pacific Avenue, and this told that we just don't know. They kept no records on who complained and where those benches were, you know, were removed. Well, actually, they have records on where the benches were taken to, but they don't have records on when the benches were removed and why they were removed and who ordered them removed in terms of complaints. So, I got lost in that last barrage, but I think what I wanted to do, we're going to be talking about at this upcoming Wired Wash Street Performers meeting some issues around the upcoming city council meeting, which I encourage you to, if you don't come to the city council meeting at 7 o'clock on Tuesday, and it probably won't actually hit the item until considerably later, though it's hard to tell. As I said, they've tried to make it as difficult as possible for the people. This is going to be probably the item that is most looked at on the agenda, unless I'm wrong. I'm not totally familiar with the other items, so I could be wrong, but I suspect it's going to be the most controversial and divisive item on the agenda, and probably the one which has the most people there. Hopefully, we'll get a lot of people to come to the meeting. But it's next to the last item, so one, you don't know when it's going to happen, and two, it's probably going to happen late, and it's going to make it harder. There will be some hot vegan soup provided by India Joe Schultz. Utah Phillips has been invited to either attend, I don't think he's going to be able to, or to send a statement of support. And I want to remind you that Utah Phillips will be in the studio shortly, within the next half hour. He should be here with interviewer John Malkin to talk about numerous things, maybe to do some performing, and maybe he will speak out against these downtown ordinances. That's important, too. The point is that, this is the point I kind of began to make when I got lost in my own verbiage, that no merchants showed up at this meeting. There were also no police, and there were no hosts, but I think the point that Bob Guzley and Scott Kennedy made is relevant, that, you know, the hosts and the police and the, who is it? Hey, come in. I want to make sure this man wasn't the FCC, and he could be, but he's very well disguised if he's an FCC person. So, at this meeting, there were no merchants, and it was kind of generally agreed, if you look back 6 months ago, merchants turned out aplenty at the Riley Porter committee hearings because there was no law firmly put into place, and there was real discussion about what that law should be. So there really was a real discussion and real involvement and real back and forth between different musicians and political activists and poor people and beggars and skateboarders and bicycle riders and so forth. At this meeting, however, there was mainly the street performers and some sympathizers, a couple council members, a facilitator or two, a couple members of the community, but there was no merchants. And the reason there were no merchants is because they had their done deal. So what the meeting, in essence, many of us in the meeting anyway, said was, look, And I hope that the street performers sort of reinforce this today at 2 o'clock when they meet. We aren't going to get any real dialogue with the merchants unless the city council holds off on making these laws worse. The merchants somehow feel that standing 6 feet away from a building and 10 feet away from a crosswalk and nowhere in front of a sidewalk cafe, this is not enough of a forbidden zone. That you have to expand all these distances to 10 feet, which will eliminate all but 20% of the sidewalk. And you also have to put in this move-along musicians law, which was considered back in 1993 and dumped when it was pointed out it was unconstitutional. So they want all this stuff, and they already got a first reading of it all by the entire council. Kennedy said he was going to vote for it, pretty much, at his... He would not recommend postponing it, as he said. And he was reassuring us, oh, don't worry, the police will ignore the bad laws, they'll just go after the bad people. Oh, don't worry, if there's a problem, come to me, I'll talk to you about it. Really horrible way of any kind of legislation being put into effect. I mean, I can't believe it. But in any case, clearly the way to bring the merchants back to this real dialogue, if they have real concerns, if they have a stack of complaints about street performers or other groups, let's see them. Not just in the secret emails to Emily Riley and Ed Porter. I don't mean really secret, I was able to get access to them. But, you know, what complaints were actually made to the police? What attempts did they make to use existing laws, such as disturbing the peace, excessive noise, if they really felt that was happening, or other things, in any particular problems against street performers, who we were told were only a fraction of a percent of the complaints anyway. Let's not have a whole bunch of new laws first. First, let's have a real dialogue and get some real information, as Downtown Commissioner Bob Guzley said about an hour ago. Kennedy didn't want to do that. Riley was also at the meeting, didn't indicate she wanted to do that. All they want to do is send a message, we support the merchants. And it's sort of the fantasy, this is that by supporting the merchants this way, they're going to encourage more business downtown. You know, in recessionary times, poor people, people who look different, people with less money are blamed for the problems of those who probably should have acted more wisely. Or maybe they couldn't. We're all victims to an extent of the economy. But we can't let this happen. We cannot let this community scapegoat poor people even more than they're doing. And that's why we have to show up at City Council or email them. And you can email City Council. I will give you the address in case you wish to let them know no. City Council, one word, small letters, CITYCOUNCIL at ci.santa-cruz.ca.us. Again, City Council at ca.santa-cruz.ca.us. And the message should be, well, for me, the message is dump the downtown ordinances, return to existing laws that deal with real bad behavior, not where you happen to be sitting. You know, merchants would prefer to have the sidewalks privatized. That's nice. Let them go buy a mall, and they can get privatized. But in the meantime, the city center belongs to all of us, or should. Unfortunately, that's not what the police think, that's not how the police act, and that's not what the city council is doing. So we need to take action to return it to all of us. And that's actually going to require action outside the city council. But it's still good to come to city council and tell them and the community, some of whom are listening, and the Sentinel, who will no doubt misreport you, but nonetheless, the obvious. You know, that if there is no problem, you don't need to put bad laws into effect. And if there is a problem, you need to outline exactly what it is and examine exactly what kind of laws would best address it. And use the commissions that you gave that charge to actually get that done. So, what laws are coming up? Well, here are the ordinances that they're going to be voting on tomorrow, sometime after 7 o'clock, probably sometime after 9 o'clock, although I don't know for sure what's going on. It will become illegal to have a display device in community commercial, neighborhood commercial, commercial beach, central business district, and tourist residential zones. That's anything with a business in it, pretty much. Within 10 feet of any building entrance or fence or structure separating private property from the public right-of-way, where you measure that from
the point at which the building abuts the sidewalk. Within 10 feet of any street corner or intersection. Within 10 feet of any kiosk or mid-block crosswalk. Within 10 feet of any drinking fountain, public telephone, or bench. Within any portion of the sidewalk between the license limit line of the sidewalk cafe or other open-air eating establishment and the curb of the sidewalk, anywhere in front of a street cafe, in other words, and in no other location within 10 feet of such license area limit line and within 10 feet of any vending cart. No person shall be cited under this section unless he or she has first been notified by a public officer or downtown host. So you've got to be warned first. And police have not been doing this, by the way, even under the old law, even though the same provision, minus the addition for downtown hosts, is there. An alternate version that they'll be voting on includes the so-called move-along law, which says, no person shall allow a display device to remain in the same location on the sidewalk for a period of time exceeding 1 hour. After 1 hour, the person who placed the display device on the sidewalk shall not place a display device on the sidewalk within 100 feet of the original display device location. After 1 hour, the person who placed the display device shall not place a display device in the original display device location or within 100 feet of the original display device location for 24 hours, and you've got to be warned about it first. That's the move-along musician's law, which, of course, also means move along anybody with a table, like a political table. Don't register Democrats for more than an hour here. Don't say Free Mumia or protest the Gap or attempt to, say, end the downtown ordinances and the sleeping bag. A sleeping ban for more than an hour. It's a severe limitation on free speech that there's no indication that problems are requiring such a law. Why are they doing it then? Because they want to get rid of poor and homeless people who they're also getting rid of under the 14-foot bans. And they don't want to seem like they're saying, oh, we can allow street performers and we can allow people at political tables, but we will get rid of the homeless. Not only doesn't that look bad, but it doesn't stand up in court. So they're going to criminalize everybody to get rid of the people that the merchants think don't look so good. This is not something we should support, folks. This is something we're going to have to resist. And it's not going to happen when you make a call to Scott Kennedy, although I suggest you call the City Council right now at 420-5017. Again, 420-5017 and say no. No downtown ordinances, no move-along law, no forbidden zones. Use existing laws to deal with the issue and stop police harassment downtown. That's the message for my money. Another thing they're going to be passing is exempt zones. Here's how it reads. Notwithstanding the distance restrictions set forth, the City Council by resolution may from time to time designate exempt zones where display devices may be placed on city streets and sidewalks at locations where placement would ordinarily be prohibited. In designating an exempt zone, the City Council shall first determine the placement of display devices in the exempt zone will not impede or interfere with the safe, orderly, and adequate public access and pedestrian traffic on city streets and sidewalks. Now, it should be said that there's already a provision in the City Code which makes it illegal to impede or interfere with the safe, orderly, and adequate access, public access, and pedestrian traffic. They don't need it. They don't need stuff about obstructing the sidewalk. It's already there. The exempt zones is a proposal you heard earlier was considered by Bob Guzley, the Downtown Commission, and dismissed. Said, no, we can't use it. They investigated it and said it isn't going to work because, first of all, most merchants don't want people in front of their stores. And then, secondly, those that do are going to be, there's going to be a huge vying for those small exempted zones. Because even though they're only expanding the forbidden zone from 6 feet to 10 feet, they're also expanding it from a bench, from a crosswalk, from a kiosk. The expansion is massive in terms of the total amount of space that is being taken away. There's another change. Solicitation means any verbal request or any nonverbal request made with a sign by a person seeking an immediate donation of money, food, cigarettes, or items of value, under circumstances where a reasonable person would understand that the purchase is in substance a donation, is a donation for the purposes of this chapter. So that's all illegal, unless you are 14 feet from a building, not doing it at night, not doing it in a seated position, not doing it in a group of two or more, and also, you cannot do it in such a way that anyone inside the 14-foot zone is being solicited. So that means if somebody inside the 14-foot zone can see your sign, police can argue, they are being solicited. Hence, you better turn your sign toward the cars, I guess. This is the most absurd kind of law that I've heard of. But again, it's supposed to be a public relations gesture to the merchants. Bad news, folks. Here is the additional sentence, however, that is supposed to save the street performers. It says, a person is not soliciting for purposes of this chapter when he or she passively displays a sign or places a collection container on the sidewalk, that would be like a guitar case, pursuant to which he or she receives monetary offerings in appreciation for entertainment or a street performance he or she provides. So this is the out for the street performers. This is the little bait that says, street performers, you're okay. We just don't want those dirty hippies, and we don't want those beggars, and we don't want those political activists. So just you go your way, you do your thing, and let the rest of these people go to jail. We're not going to take you. I think they tried the same thing in Germany in 1933 when they took the mentally ill, then they took the gays. I guess it was the socialists might have been the first. The communists might have been first. In any case, this crap of slicing off one group after another is contemptible, and it's also unconstitutional. Now, whether we have we haven't got much of a constitution left in this country, and we haven't got a court that really respects the Constitution in any expectable or predictable or reliable way. We had thought we had some kind of movement in Santa Cruz to restore constitutional rights. Think again. That movement has got to come from us. What else have we got? We have an emergency ordinance coming up here which stops 14-foot forbidden zones from coming into play. And this, I suppose, is good because they were going to make it illegal to have 14-foot zones make it illegal to be within 14 feet of anything instead of within 10 feet. So in some places, it gives you small areas to be legally. There's also a redefinition of what a display device is. And unfortunately, I don't think that... Bob did not include that in his printout. But the display device, they are dropping from display device the words box and container. And I think one more word. So that you can have a guitar case, and it's not a display device. And this idea of just sort of privileged positions for the street performers, as they turn a blind eye, as their brothers and sisters are hauled off or told they can't be there. And indeed, the only panhandler I saw who was obeying all the rules, I don't know if you know him, Steve Elliott, guy with a sign across from the Cinema 9, holding up his little sign saying, need help. He's in front of O'Neill's now because it's illegal to have a sign on the other side of the street. He was given a $162 panhandling ticket. I think he said it was a $180 ticket. I think it's $162 is their normal thing. So they're going after people anyway. It's this... The police seem to be motivating this.